Is this Tim?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, it's me. How are you?
Oh, splendid.
Splendid?
Splendid, yeah.
I have to tell you, I didn't know what to expect with this film, The Noodles of Noodland. Number one, opening with the animated titles. That animation and your song, your title song, the animation is adorable. The title song is hilarious.
Cool.
I was particularly fond of the refrain about animals don't wear pants.
They don't.
And then we get into the live action. And I wasn't sure what to expect. But I have to tell you, it is ridiculous fun.
Great. Good. I'm glad.
Why were you compelled to make this film? This is not mainstream. This is not what you even expect to see in low-budget, no-budget, micro-budget indies. So I'm curious, why? What possessed you to make this film?
For starters, I'm a nudist, so It begins with that. I was even born naked. I discovered it, you know, as a lifestyle when I was in college. I was an art student, and folks would pose nude for the drawing classes, and it was a bucket list thing where I was like, I have to participate. I have to do this. I can't die without having tried it. And so I did, and I loved it, and I started going to resorts and beaches, and when I moved to California, there's just a hotbed of naturist activity out here, so I've done everything from nude bowling to nude boating to naked bike rides to everything else, and I've been working in entertainment for a long time. I was a touring stand-up comic, and I had TV shows, and I worked in movies, and I wanted to create something that I felt would put a spotlight on the naturist community because it is such a underrepresented minority group that nobody creates any sort of entertainment around. So that was the idea for it. And so far the responses have been really good, really nice, and I'm pretty happy with how it's turning out.
It is. It's fun ridiculum. You laugh through, I'd say, 90% of the film. And when we get to the second half with your character of Tim, and then the lovely Luz, and we get a love story going. And at that point, you see the two of you together on the swings with the sun setting, and it's like, aww. You even give us that. I love that. You have us laugh, you touch our hearts, and you make us scratch our heads the whole time. One thing I did notice, and I don't know if this was purposeful or your intent, but the voice in the head guy in the cop, Officer D-Man, it reminded me of Stan Lee. He reminded me of Stan Lee popping up in cameos in all the Marvel films.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
And
yeah, Albert, the actor, has played a cop in lots of things.
Yes, he has.
Yeah, that's kind of what he's known for.
His look and everything, it felt like a Stan Lee kind of cameo. And I just thought that was really charming. So see, now you can lie and tell everybody that, yeah, that's why you put him in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We just got an offer from Troma, from Lloyd Kaufman's company, Troma Now. They want to put it on their streaming platform. And I was looking at some of their content. I looked at Return to Nukem High Part 2, and Stan Lee has a extended cameo in their movie.
And I think Troma is a great place for this film.
Yeah, Troma's pretty wacky and silly and goofy, and Lloyd's been a friend of mine for years. I took a tour of his studios, and you know, a lot of people who are pretty successful started off with Troma, behind South Park, or James Gunn, who does Guardians of the Galaxy, and the Suicide Squad, and all this. He started off with Troma.
This is where stuff can really get discovered.
But yeah, we're even doing a screening next month in near Pasadena.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing two nights of screening the movie. And so, you know, it's getting out there, and people are seeing it, and people are checking it out. Of course, at thenoodles.com or nudisthumorous.com, they both redirect to the same place. But it's been great just hearing the responses and seeing how people are discovering it. And, you know, all the clubs and groups and organizations are real excited to have something out there that practices what it preaches. A lot of times people say that they create a nudist film, but then it's it's an excuse to exploit naked bodies. Mm-hmm. And ours, we say it's non-sexual, and we mean it's non-sexual. The only sex scene in the movie, we put clothes on.
Yes.
To roll around on the bed. So that's, the whole thing is a big parody and a gag. Like, we just legitimately... And the other thing is, the reason Luz got cast as... Well, Juliana Acosta is the real woman's name. But the reason she played Luz was because, in real life, she's a nudist. She and I both are real nudists. So we're not playing a part in a movie... that you wouldn't care. Like, if you go to a nude beach in California, you could run into her and me just hanging out. And that's important for me, to have the authenticity of it being legit and real, and we practice what we preach, and so it's very fun. And if, you know, if the response stays the same way it is, we're talking about a naked sitcom or a naked musical or a naked stand-up comedy special or just creating more naturist entertainment.
I can so see that happening as a result of this film, Tim. Because number one, it's funny, and everybody wants to laugh. They need to laugh. But it also shines a light on the naturist community.
Yeah.
What was the idea for this script? And I know right off the bat, you set us up as we're going from Mexico to the U.S. You have the same actors. We got wigs getting thrown on. And you really tongue-in-cheek lines, dialogue happening. So you set us up right away. But I'm curious how you went about crafting this.
The original plan years ago, like a decade ago, was for a naturist horror movie. Yeah, it was called Naked Alien Massacre.
So oh my God!
You know how the Predator had heat vision?
Yeah.
Well, my aliens would have clothes vision. So they don't hurt raccoons and bears and deer because they don't wear clothes. But if you dare to wear clothes, that's an abomination of nature, and so your clothes glows in their eyes, and they go mad crazy and they have to kill you. So the only way to stay alive is to be naked. So they a couple of adult humans, you know, opened a naturist resort, and everyone's naked, and so they're fine. But over one fateful night, this girl goes on a date with this guy, and she, you know, she's never been to a nudist event before, and so she keeps her clothes on, and this causes problems, and then her brother shows up, and some other people show up, and there's this introduction of people wearing clothes to this wonderful, lovely Garden of Eden where that hasn't been the case, and it brings out these monsters. Anyway, long story short, we didn't get the funding, and so I focused on other projects. And then I started kicking around the idea with some friends of mine, and we thought about doing a Saturday Night Live for nudism. So originally the noodles was going to be sketch comedy bits, and then the more I got into it, the hard part for me, as you can imagine, the people who are willing to get naked
right.
may not have the acting or comedic chops. And then the people who are professional actor-comedians have concerns about footage of them fully nude,
right.
how that could affect their career. So I have to navigate the in-between of, you know, who are the funniest naked people I know? Who are the most talented entertainers I know who may be willing to try this? And then somewhere in between, I try to put together the best team I could. So, so it started off as a naked horror movie. Then it became a sketch comedy, and then eventually it became this. And I ended up playing one of the leads because I had to have somebody who, you know, I've been a professional touring stand-up comic for 12 years. I've had residencies in Vegas and stuff like that, and I've always been a nudist. So it's like, all right, well, you know, I have to play one of the leads because I'm going to actually do what this movie needs. And then Luz and I have worked on other touring stand-up comedy events or naked plays and things like that. So I knew she was great. And all I needed was like four more to really build it around. And that became Rochelle, who was in the Jubilee Spectrum Nudist episode, which has over 1 million views. That's where I discovered her. And then, you know, Jeremiah Benjamin, who plays the streaker,
mm-hmm.
and Albert the cop, and then Julie Ante, who plays Barbed Wire, the rough and gruff nudist.
Mm-hmm.
That was the core of the story, and everybody else was kind of interchangeable based on who could I get, who would be willing to come out.
Mm-hmm. Got an interesting cast of characters here, not just with your actors, but also with the characters that you have created. I mean, Julie's character of Barb Wire is hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And similarly with Jeremiah's character of Mondo Man, our streaker. Him at the pool standing there flashing everybody with his clothes on was just, it's funny as can be. How did you create the individual characters within the film and the situations? I mean, you've got two people, they're looking at photographs. And they're not, and they're talking about how the beauty of the photographs and the bubbles and the reflection of the water. Not commenting at all about the fact that the individuals are nude in the pictures.
Oh, the artwork was done by Virginia Lukai, who is actually a real-life painter in real life. Those are her paintings.
Those are beautiful. The swimming pool ones with the reflection, absolutely beautiful. But I love how you keep us in that tongue-in-cheek mindset. So the dialogue is all revolving around the elements of the painting with the light and the texture, as opposed to naked people. Nakedness is very secondary.
Yeah, I wanted it to be that once people got into the story, that they forgot that people were naked. That's always been the big crux, where I firmly believe that, you know, you can be nude and it not turn into a sexual adventure. You know, in America, you only get naked to shower or have sex for the most part. And I want to introduce the fact that it is possible for people to live their normal lives naked, which is what you find at resorts, beaches, mm-hmm. cruise ships, all this kind of stuff. It's, you know, in other countries, it's not such a big deal. And, you know, France, there's generations of, you know, families and nudists that go to beaches and events and, you know, everybody. So for what I'm trying to do in this movie, I'm trying to show that it is possible and it doesn't have, we don't say one thing and do something else, that it genuinely is what we say it is. So.
Well, I have to say, I was utterly amazed that I didn't see sunburns all over the place.
Oh, I got sunburned by the end of it. There's a YouTube video where I comment after I come back. And if you look up Nudeland or Noodles of Nudeland, you'll get me. And I talk for like 5 minutes. Oh, I think it's on the website, too. We interstitched it with some other stuff. But I talk openly about getting a sunburn and some of the issues of having, you know, shooting a movie and all this and that. And of course, I do bigger budget movies. Mm-hmm. I just finished Hell's Coming for You, which we shot in Vegas for 5 days, a break, 5 days, and then 2 stunt days. So it was something like 15 days total. And it had a huge budget. But this Noodle, I pulled favors and I, you know, had 2 investors, but the rest I funded myself. And it was on the smaller side purposely. It's kind of like my Clerks for nudism. Just mm-hmm. kind of see, is there a response? Is there an interest? Because the thing is, any of the filmmakers that I associate with who have done nudist comedies, they lie. They lie about their numbers. Everybody wants to pretend to be so successful. So it's impossible for me as a filmmaker to know what to do. Like, you know, when I talk to somebody, the director of Act Naturally or the director of, you know, Naked in the 21st Century, and I say, how did your movie do? Oh, huge, big, giant numbers. And I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, I just want somebody to tell me the truth. And at least by putting this out on digital, I can watch the numbers. I know exactly how it's selling. And it gives me an idea of what's realistic to move mm-hmm. forward. Because on the business side, you don't want to put out, you know, $200,000 on something that'll make you $50,000.
Right.
That's horrible business, you know? So.
Yeah, you have to look at it very pragmatically and economically. Because this is a comedy. Well, before I get to the comedy part, I love your scene transitions and pop-ups of nature. Beautiful beaches, animals in pairs. We see looks on animals popping up that are very entertaining to see. But you've got beautiful insets from around the globe. Where did you get all of those?
There's a program called Storyblocks, and filmmakers have access to it. You can pay for a subscription fee, and you have access to all of this footage that has been shot, and you can use it to your heart's content.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we would look up things that we felt would add to the island, add to animals, add to nature, add to inserts. Like, there's a moment when my girlfriend breaks up with me. Before I talk with her, there's a quick insert of me buying the tickets
mm-hmm.
to the theater show. You know, when Juliana and I are rolling around on the bed, we cut to flowers blooming and, you know, bumblebees and honey and kind of like sexual innuendo stuff. And so, you know, we wanted to use it to add to the fun and kind of the silliness of the movie, because it's kind of an Ed Wood strategy,
yeah,
right? That you throw in all this archive footage to enhance what you have access to shoot.
But, and it also, it's so beautiful. I mean, you look at that, and it, all of that footage, it's just stunning. So it really keeps you bouncing.
Yeah, well, we wanted it to, it's all part of the plan. So wait, what we do have access to, what we can do. We utilized a drone, we utilized, you know, the resort, which is a Royal Del Sol, part of the Clothing Optional Home Network near Pasadena, California.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that. We were shooting there. We utilized everything we had access to, because it wasn't, like I said, the biggest budget. We pulled favors, and we had people helping out with this and that. And it was in post-production for about 8 months. It was much longer than we expected. But, you know, at least it finally came out. There's so many things that movies and projects people work on that never get released.
That's right.
But at least we finally was able to land this plane.
Mm-hmm. Post-production, 8 months is not bad to be in post. And this, I'm really curious about your editing, because it is a comedy. You've got to find your pacing. You've got to have those comedy beats. And in large part, you're working with non-actors. Nudists, but not actors. How challenging was it to find those comedy beats in the editing process? Or did you find yourself repeatedly going back to you as setting the comedic tone?
Well, there was issues because, like, for example, the first cut was too long. It was around 2 hours, and it was just the notes we got from a lot of my beta viewers was, although it was you know, fun and all this, it was too long. It was just too long. So we had to go back and kill our darlings, as they say, and we had to cut out some stuff, make some hard decisions. That's why I have, when somebody buys the movie off of the website, they also get access to interviews with the cast, so
mm-hmm.
they can find out what everybody's like, but then also deleted or extended scenes, because there are scenes that I enjoy that I think are entertaining or funny or whatever, but, you know, if something had to go, gun to head, I had to pick these scenes. The other thing is, once the movie was done shooting, I had nudists from all over the world say, we wish we could have been in your movie.
And
they said, you know, can I send you footage to insert into the movie? And so all of these people sent us footage, and we didn't know what the heck to do with it, because it didn't have the greatest quality or the greatest sound or the greatest whatever. And so that was a bit of the montage of the commercial of the nude lamp. So those were clips of people who sent in footage, but each one of those clips was, you know, 10 minutes of footage of people trying to do things to help our movie. And it was, you know, it was painful for us to have to make some hard decisions about that kind of stuff, for sure.
Well, I have to say, I did thoroughly enjoy the in-film commercials.
You know, one of the cool things that we're discovering is people thought clothes-free was not real.
It's real!
They thought it was just created for the movie, and it's very real. Clothesfree.com has been around for about 15 years.
I had to go take a look at it after seeing the film, and that's an extremely informative website.
Yeah.
In many respects, it's not just, granted, there are it promotes over 35,000 photographs of nude people, but one of the big things, it shows you everywhere in the world.
Right, and the videos. I mean, they put up a new video every week, and like I said, it's been around forever. There's huge archives, and so when you join the website, you can go through all of this history of nudist events and see what's going on all around the world. It's the best place to be if you're a nudist, he says in the movie.
Your maps are great. You have North America and the world, and they're color-coded. Clothesfree.com has them color-coded as to where no nudity is allowed and where you can find nudist camps, nudist beaches, parks, whatever. And I just thought that's so clever.
Yeah, so it's great. I've always been a big fan. I know Corky's in it for the right reasons. And, you know, he's been on the ANR board, the American Association of Nude Recreation and all this. So you know, we're all vetted and clean, and we're in it for the right reasons, and it's very exciting and fun, and he's a good dude. And so, yeah, those kind of segments in the movie I felt added to it. I had some people say that they felt like, they got it wrong. They thought he was trying to jam his business into my movie, like he was forcing me to advertise his website. No, it was the other way around. When I created the movie, I only thought it would add
yes. The
fun and the scope of the concept of nudism to have actual footage out there in the world. And I know some people say that it makes it look a little bit like a documentary, but great, good. I'm trying to educate people in a silly way. That's why the end credits of the movie has all that footage of people doing nudist events, you know, surfing and skiing and skydiving and camping and concerts. And because I don't want it to be limited in scope where people are like, yeah, I mean, that's okay for those few actors. No, it's a huge, giant world of opportunities and just abundance for nudism and naturist ideas and concepts and events. And, you know, I want people to get a little glimpse of that as like a tip of the iceberg to say, oh, wow, I had no idea.
I think the in-film commercials were hilarious. I love them. I thought they were so much fun. But then you also do something, and this really surprised me, Tim. You did something very cinematic here with the voices in the head segments. As Tim and Luz, you guys are trying, it's like you're having nightmares with these faces popping in, you know, no, you have to wear clothes, you have to wear clothes. The super saturation comic filter that you put on there with color, I mean, just stunning. Gorgeous cinematic elements.
We also try to match up, you know, like we have the insert of the bats to kind of imply that it's more nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the moment, which it has been cut down from its original form, but where the one guy's crying in the shower. That's all.
The crying in the shower.
Emotional time, yeah. But that is an extended, one of the extended scenes in the footage. So I'll send that to you. But I wanted to give the people enough freedom to, although there was a script, I also, once people were defining their characters, I wanted to give them some improv abilities on set, opportunity to anyway, they improv that scene in the shower that was more extended, and you can check it out when I send you that cut, but there was a few different moments like that where we gathered up some characters and we said, you know, I want you to improv this, or I want you to improv that, or here's some bullet points. And we got some fun little bits, like when Luce is trying to get a job, or when I'm going on the date with the girls, they keep throwing a cup of water in my face, or, you know, we put some things together on the fly when we were out there.
I love those segments. They really add. It's eye-popping, and it's catchy, and it really picks up on the vibrancy of the opening animation and the first scenes that obviously, be it in Mexico or America, you're in the same kitchen with the bright yellow walls and whatnot. I really enjoyed that you plugged those in there.
Right, and that was by design to show the campy silliness of it, that we're not going to go out of our way to try to trick the viewer into thinking that we had bigger sets and more opportunities. And the greatest example of that would be that we used the same cop in all three countries. And that when he showed up in Mexico, he's wearing a sombrero. And that gets a laugh out of people when they see that for the first time. Because at this point, it's like, oh my God, this guy, you know, these people, they're in on the joke, you know?
You really succeed at that with Noodles of Nudeland, Tim. So much of it, it's a big joke. We're in on it.
Yeah.
And that's always fun when you can see something like that and you can appreciate the humor of it.
Absolutely. Well, so that is what we created, and I'm happy. I will never regret making this movie, you know. I'm very, very happy, and I wanted to put something out there that when I was in college looking for representation like this, you know, I didn't have it. I didn't have it to look at. So I want people to know that there is a world out there of nudism and nudists, and that they can have a sense of humor, and that they can be silly and parody and have fun and not take themselves too seriously. So I'm very happy with it, and I'm glad you got it and you understand what we were trying to accomplish.
And what's really fascinating is you have no profanity in the film.
Well, Now, you know, I mean, somebody who's a super stickler can find, I think I, can I swear on your podcast?
Yes, you can.
So I say shit in the hot tub, and then he calls her Shane calls her a whore. Remember, he's like,
yeah,
you're a hoochie or a whore. Those are the two that we, that was the worst that we got.
Yeah.
But that was by design as well, because, again, real naturism is family friendly. It's not sexual. There are, you know, kids and play parks and all this kind of stuff because it's non-sexual, because there isn't a bunch of weirdos and perverts. It's human bodies and naturism, and so there's no reason to have ultra violence, ultra swearing, or I wanted it, and I also want to create that conversation where my movie is, you know, if you were to rate it, it would be probably PG, and, you know, so then the question comes, like, who can watch this? Why couldn't they watch it? And why is it okay for somebody to slit their throat on The Walking Dead with blood coming out, and the family can watch that, but you can't watch, you know, a body the way, you know, the way we are? So I want to enter into those kind of conversations, like, get people questioning certain things.
All those little things, it told me you put a lot of thought into what you were putting together here. I've got to ask you, since we're just about out of time, I've got to ask you, what did you, as a filmmaker, what did you learn about yourself in making Noodles of Nudeland that you can now take forward into future productions, be they with or without clothes?
I did have another project that I did after Noodles. So after Noodles was done filming, we then went on to shoot Hell's Coming for You. And so I was able to take that into that approach. I actually recast a couple of the characters, like Jeremiah Benjamin. He played a part in my other movie. Joe Filippone, he played another character. And I had Al Burt play a cop again. He threw a big fight with a bounty hunter, and they're kicking the crap out of each other on the side of a road here in Las Vegas. And so I utilized those three performers again in the other movie, which is more action horror, which Shudder is interested in picking that one up. But as far as what I learned that the prep time is really important, and that you can't leave anything up for, you know, it's good to have an opportunity where you can tell performers and stuff, okay, you know, you've done the take that was in the script. Now, you know, surprise me. Just do a fun take, and we'll see. If we can use it, we'll use it. If not, that's okay. But you do have to, be on top of the folks and kind of, you know, micromanage a little bit. I'll give you an example. You know, I sent my film, because I was working on a bunch of things, trying to balance it all out, and at one point I wanted to catch B-roll of a barbed wire with her little mandolin by the side of the pool, and so I sent our film guys over there with her, and I said, I want you to ad-lib a bunch of lines and things for her to say, such as, and I threw one out, and I said, I put the man in mandolin. And so I said, okay, take that one, and, you know, and then I want you to do a bunch of other takes. And then later, after, you know, the end of the day or whatever, when I'm looking at things, it turns out that's the only one they did. The only one between, because the crew aren't creative, and she's a performer, but she performs what I tell her to perform. So I had a team of people who were shooting and the actress, and all they did was the line I gave them, because they had no ideas of their own. And that kind of thing kind of disappoints me, where it's like, ah, geez, like, if it was me over there, I would have came up with 20 different ad-lib lines, you know? So you kind of have to be aware of where people's limitations are and kind of, you know, work within that. I also had a member of my tech team quit. And he wanted to leave, and people were trying to convince him to stay, and so that was very frustrating, and that taught me some things about things. I learned I had a real heart and a passion for artists, because, you know, it's hard to make a living doing it. So I wanted to pay people half up front and half at the end, so that they had some money, and it turns out I paid somebody half up front, and then they never showed up.
Lovely.
So, they ruined it for me doing that for other people in the future, because, you know, a lot of people told me, they're like, if you don't pay somebody until they've done the work, that's common sense. You work a day job, you know, you get paid every 2 weeks. You don't pay somebody part of the money up front. Well, bigger than my brain, and I thought I could because they're artists, and you know, that person screwed it for the future for that. You know, I'm not going to be that dumb next time.
I've been guilty of the same thing, Tim. I've done that before, and it only came up to bite me in the butt.
Yeah. So, and then I learned about putting out fires with drama on set, picking and choosing your battles, you know, smiling and getting along with somebody that is being very difficult and diva-ish. And all you can think about is, you know, whatever it takes to get this done, whatever it takes to get it in the can. And, you know, as long as it's on screen, that's all that matters. All the drama and BS and bickering behind the scenes, nobody sees that. Just shut up and push through. So
I can't imagine you not ever having a time that you're not smiling on set. I mean, you are so bubbly, so effervescent, and energetic. I can't imagine you ever being on set and not smiling at your crew, even if you want to rip their throats out sometimes.
It's definitely a fun place to be. I feel like a spider on a spider web when I'm doing a movie. Like, I'm running around, doing all these things, making sure everything's put together right. And it's all the little things that people never think about, you know, like food, you know, ordering lunch, and then it comes a little early, and people want to break to eat it, and it's like, no, our lunch time is at this time, so even if it's there, you know, and they're like, oh, but what if it gets cold? But at the same time, if it shows up late, they're complaining and bitching that it's late.
Yeah.
So there's no way to win. If it comes early, they want to break early, but if it comes late, they're mad it isn't there on time. So it's just like, ah. And then the second movie I did, not Noodles, but Hell's Coming for You, it was after the Alec Baldwin situation. And we had guns on that set. So there became this huge war of people where it was frustrating because we had the proper gun checking folks who had law enforcement background and all that, which is fine, but it becomes more complicated in situations like this. So the actors are comfortable with our people checking the guns to make sure there's no live ammunition,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. We show them that it's open, show them there's nothing in it, all that. So they trust them for that, but then some of the places that we went to shoot were also doubling as tourist attractions, bring a bunch of real guns, even with no bullets, to some place that doesn't have a closed-off protected set because, theoretically, if somebody heard there was a pile of real guns, they could show up with their own bullets and take over the set.
Yes.
Or steal the guns. So because of that, you legally have to have our gun people with a real gun on their holster with real bullets to protect the guns that don't have bullets. But do you see the problem we're running into? As soon as they think, you said there wasn't going to be any real guns on set. Well, what do you want us to do? Have a giant pile of guns with no bullets and nobody protecting me? So it became, it was just a war on set. And these are the kind of things nobody looks forward to when you're making a movie.
Well, you know, and just when you think you've heard it all and experienced it all, something else pops up.
At the end of the day, this is why we do it. You know, our little nomadic, you know, gypsy family that hop from gig to gig and project to project to put something out there into the world and have somebody notice it, have somebody recognize you and say, I enjoyed your movie, you know?
I'm looking forward to Hell's Coming for You. I'm not going to lie. I am looking forward to that.
Well, it stars a disabled man who's never had the use of his leg playing the part of a disabled bounty hunter. So once again, I'm giving representation to a group that's never recognized. When was the last time you saw a disabled superhero?
Tim, this has been so much fun talking with you. We have to do it again.
Sure, I would love that. I'm in Vegas, I think. Are you in L.A.?
I'm in L.A.
Cool, very cool. I was just down there for WonderCon promoting a couple of projects.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're in L.A., we're doing that screening in Pasadena, and the first one is clothing optional, so you can come out and say hi.
When are your screenings in Pasadena?
I think it's the 23rd of May. Let me grab you. Yep. So Monday, May 23rd is the clothing optional cast and crew screening, and then on the 26th, it's fully nude for nudists to come and see it. But it's at the it's like a Swiss Center in Pasadena. I can get you all the info because we literally just walked it in like yesterday.
Terrific.
That way, and then the director of Hell's Coming for You and the star, the disabled gentleman in the scooter, are going to be at the premiere because he's the executive producer of The Noodle and Noodlin, Dylan Dillegas. We're already planning some more things. We're shooting a movie in Seattle, and we've got something we're doing in Florida. And I never married, no kids. I'm a workaholic. I just love what I do, and the fact that I get to make a living at it is I'm very blessed. And so I want to keep that train going.
Tim, thank you so much, and I can't wait till we do this again.
Yeah, I would love that. Thanks, man.
Thanks, bye. Tim. Bye-bye.